Hey, good morning and welcome to Local 100 Arkansas United Labor Unions. So, got a very interesting guest this morning. I'm talking to Maddie, who's from Edinburgh, Scotland. Is that right?
Well, technically I'm from the Netherlands, but I live in Fife these days and I commute into Edinburgh to organize tenants there.
Okay. So Maddie, give me a little history or a little background information on you and how did you get from, I heard you say you're from the Netherlands. How did you get from the Netherlands, you know, to Fife?
Okay. So it's a long story. I lived in the Netherlands, basically all my life, with an American mom and a Canadian dad. And I was pretty much obsessed with Scotland all my life. I always wanted to live there. And with Brexit going on, I thought I have to get on it. I wanted to get a job there. Always been very political. The job for the tenants union opened up. I applied and I got it. And yeah, now I'm living the dream.
And talking to you over the past couple of days, in fact, we are here in from England at a place called 42 Acres for our annual international organizers meeting. And earlier we were talking, you were telling me that you have some connections to the United States, Texas and California.
Texas and California, that's right. I've got family in California. I've got family in Texas and some in upstate New York.
Okay.
So yeah, all over the place really.
I see. So you hit New York and then you got deep south and then you got the wild, wild west.
Exactly.
In California. So you covered everything. So Maddie, tell us about how did you get started in organizing in Fife and in Edinburgh, and what is it that you do currently in your organizing?
Well, I was studying politics and anthropology at university, and I got a grant to do fieldwork research, and which I was very free in what I was allowed to research, so I decided to research the Scottish Left. And I got involved through that in a small left political party, helped set that up while I was there, lived in Glasgow for 6 months, finished my degree in the Netherlands, and really had committed to wanting to be a community organizer of some sort. I wasn't completely sure what area I would want to organize, whether it be like a trade union or something with tenants or a community. So housing has always been a big issue for me. I remember distinctly when I went to the USA for the first time, actually, and I was in LA. I got lost from my mom. I got separated and I was just walking around and I just came upon this homeless shelter, and it was just so many people standing outside painting little paintings and stuff, and I was scared. I was about 9 years old and alone in LA, and I was looking for my mom, and this homeless guy helped me out so much and just stayed with me the whole time. And then he was black, and the police came up. My mom had found some police officers and was trying to find me, and when we kind of collided, the police just took this homeless man aside and were like ready to start beating him up, when I was just like, he was helping me. And I just remember feeling so helpless and so bad that this lovely, lovely man had no place to stay. And I remember my mom says that from that moment on, I just was always really quite adamant about wanting to do something about homelessness. I wanted to start a homeless hotel. So later, this has always influenced my political life a lot. And I'm wanting to live in Scotland. I was looking for jobs there. Living Rent, which is the organization that I work for, is a branch of Acorn, you could say, in Scotland. I'm very passionate about getting people good houses. And a decent place to live, I think, is basic human right we should all be fighting for.
And you know, that's a very unique story. And sad to say, that story, you hear that story so often about people who are trying to help somebody else. And they get sadly mistaken for doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So What other challenges have you had in being an organizer and fighting? Tell us about the tenant.
So I work in Edinburgh, and mainly in the northwest of Edinburgh, where it's an area where there's just one of my tenants refers to it as the land that the council forgot, which I found very poetic, and I've been using a lot and to help other people understand what's going on. You've got everything under the sun there. You've got council tenants, so that's people in public housing. You've got private rentals. You've got housing associations, so it's more social housing. A real mix of people. Sometimes that's a big challenge, because
when you say a real mix of people, what is the diversity makeup in Scotland, or especially Edinburgh?
Scotland's very white, I would say, there's a lot of immigrants from Poland, from Spain, especially in Edinburgh. There's some days you would walk around and think it's Spain, especially with the great weather that we've been having. A lot of Spanish speaking people, a lot of Polish people. There's a mix of that, young, old. My community that I'm trying to organize up in Northwest Edinburgh is very diverse, basically. Okay. So
is there, and I really hate to use the word, is there a lot of blacks, Africans,
No, I wouldn't say so. Not a lot of Africans. There's some Indian people, I haven't really seen that many black people. That said, there's not that many in the city overall, it's a pretty white city,
And you know what's so interesting, when you say that, a lot of people, and when I go back to the States, you know, after I lead these international forums, and I try to tell people that there's really no difference in the issues.
No.
It may be difference in the color of one's skin, mm-hmm. but the issues never change, you know? No. And so to hear you talk about, public housing, mm-hmm. here in the States, mm-hmm. In the States, when you hear public housing, there's a certain face that goes with public housing.
Right.
You know, but then you go to... Nobody thinks about, from the States, nobody thinks about public housing in Edinburgh. Nobody thinks about, government assistance in Scotland. You know, like, what's that? That's only for here, mm-hmm. in the States. But it's so refreshing to hear that, hey, we have issues too. We have a rent that's unaffordable. We have jobs that don't pay enough. And, mm-hmm. and so to hear you talk about, trying to turn those problems around and try to do something about them.
Yeah.
So tell me about, going about on a day-to-day basis, trying to organize, mm-hmm. and trying to talk to people about what they can do. What are some of the challenges?
The challenges are really making people believe that they can change their circumstances, that their circumstances are worth changing as well. Sometimes people just really don't think that their situation is bad enough. I was at the door and a woman had just woken up, had worked night shift. I'd woken her up and I asked her, what do you have any issues in your house? Is your landlord being okay? And she was with the council. So that automatically, like, a lot of people think, I'm better off than most. I have a public house, I'm good. And then, like, just talking a little bit more, she was like, my floor is so creaky that I'm sometimes afraid that it's just gonna, implode, and I'm gonna be able to see the house underneath me, and then she's like, do you think that that's something worth saying? Yeah, of course, yeah, and it's really kind of about activating people and making them realize, like, first of all, there are that their problems exist, and that their problems are solvable. Because if people have really bad problems, they'll just think, well, nothing's ever going to change.
Right.
And it's really about making them see the worth of getting together with their neighbors and fighting for this change. And we've definitely been able to do that in a few cases. So, you know, like, it's about telling them that, bringing a positive message to them, and making them, you know, see that they can do that themselves as well, for themselves.
Well, and you know, you bring up a great point, because so many times, as organizers, we meet so many people who feel that it's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
You know, they feel like the powers to be, or the elected officials, have all the power, mm-hmm. and that no matter what they do, it's nothing. Nothing is going to change. Some people have gotten to the point that they live in these circumstances. I hate to hear the phrase, it is what it is.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and it's like the most toxic phrase, eh?
Yes, because basically what you just told me is that there's nothing I can do, I give up.
Mm-hmm.
But the power always rests with the people.
Yes.
The power always rests with those at the bottom, because if they're willing to organize and get unified, they can change.
Absolutely.
So there's
more of us than there are of them.
It is. I think we were talking yesterday where they said 2% of the world's population controls 98% of the wealth. And, you know, and I said, well, I may not be Einstein, but I do know 98 is bigger than 2 any day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you can get the 98 mobilized, then you can do something about the 2.
Absolutely.
But I think one of the biggest things we have to do is get past our individual things. And mm-hmm. I love what you said about the knock on the lady's door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, maybe she didn't have a problem with her wages. Maybe she didn't have a problem with her job. Maybe she didn't have a problem with her rent. But that creaky floor.
Yeah.
You know, that creaky floor. You know, and you have to hone in on that one thing, because that one thing can lead to other things that you can do something about.
Yeah, definitely. And we need people like that to also just be fighting, because if she's not willing to fight on hers, then the people with worse problems just are like, oh, where do I even start? You know, so one of my most successful cases was a lovely German man living with 4 children in a 3-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
And it's a heavy one, but that wasn't even the heavy part. The heavy part was that the moment he opened his door, you could just smell the mold. It was just coming off the house like, wow, so heavy. And one of his poor kids has developed asthma because of this. And the landlord, he rung the landlord a lot of times, and just the landlord hadn't reacted whatsoever. And he was off in New York and having a good time and not reacting to anything. And we got him signed up. We got him. We asked, what are you up for? And he was a fighter. He was willing to basically do anything, you know, like to get this sorted for his child. And we found out where the landlord lived. We postered his entire neighborhood with just the state of what his house is and just his name, and just in his whole neighborhood, on every car and every door. And obviously we got an immediate response from the landlord, who was not particularly pleased with our tactics.
I wonder why.
Might not be pleased, but I sure was, because he's paid for a complete renovation of the house, state-of-the-art venting system, and a new bathroom, a new kitchen, basically, down to the cooker and the freezer, and new flooring, money to redecorate, new doors.
Wow.
All of it. And that was just, you know, that was just 5 of us postering a neighborhood. You know, so that's with how little the resources it actually takes to give somebody a major wake up call. Because these landlords, there were actually 2 of them, they owned 7 properties. So for them, it was a big scary thing of like, wait, we might lose our landlord license, basically.
Yes,
and we're going to lose a big portion of our income. And at first they were being such crybabies, like, oh, we can't afford to do all of this. and stuff, and they showed up in Calvin Klein suits, and were like, what are you wearing? Like, that can pay my salary for a month, man. So, you know, like, we were pretty relentless with them. And now, honestly, they're doing an okay job, and they're even the mold was caused by a leak in the apartment above, which is actually a different landlord, and they're actually helping out getting that landlord to sort out that house. So. It's a cascading effect, you know?
So let me ask you this, and that's interesting. So you can have a building with different apartments.
Yeah.
Would have different landlords for every apartment.
Yes, yes.
That's crazy.
Yes, yeah. And challenging, to be honest.
Oh, wow. That's kind of like, now I do know, in Little Rock, I used to live in this condominium that was managed by a property for owners. Mm-hmm. Now I know that the way these condominiums, they were side by side, and you might have one that is owned by one person, but the next one may be owned by another person. Mm-hmm. But the property managed the property mm-hmm. where the condominium was located was managed by one mm-hmm. entity.
Yeah.
So even though it was two different people who were managing for mm-hmm. anything that went wrong,
yeah.
that one property manager had to, you know, deal with it.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that if something goes wrong in one apartment mm-hmm. and you get it fixed in the next apartment, it may be something, it becomes a whole new set of priorities.
Definitely. Yeah. It's that's how it is. In any given, a lot of the blocks that I knock the doors of, you know, and talk to people in any given, like, close, so any given hallway, there's six apartments, and some of them will be owner occupied, some of them will be so sometimes there's a mix of public housing and private rent all mixed in together. Yeah. And then it can be really tough to see to bring people together around a target in that way, but what we tend to do is make sure that we're making sure that people are talking together and realize that landlords are, you know, not all the same, I would say, but, you know, they are that you can target the landlords individually and still contribute to a collective organization, basically.
So let me ask this. So is it better if you're in public housing? Do they do a better job of keeping the apartments up, or is it?
I would say generally yes, but
yeah, but it gives you some, yeah. You know, with public housing, yeah. You know, you can go directly to the city.
Yeah. And they're, they're accountable to some degree to the citizens, but, you know, like, sometimes the council is the slumlord. I've just got to be honest, where there's two high rises in the northwest of Edinburgh, that one has asbestos and, it's under the flooring, and it's supposed to be safe as long as the flooring's not cracking, but the flooring's starting to crack, and they're not keeping tenants up to date about their plans about it at all. And there's just a complete lack of communication of what's going on. And in the meantime, there's people sitting in with cracked floors with asbestos. So that's something that we're starting to organize on. And then there's a different high rise where there was a leak in the big winter with the unexpected snow, and that has caused a residual damp problem. And again, we have a family with three kids, two are twin babies. One of them, it has extreme respiratory problems. The 8-year-old in the house is also got the beginnings of bronchitis and chronic bronchitis, and is having difficulty getting along at school. And we're organizing that as well. There's a bunch of tenants in that same high rise that have the same problem, and we're planning an action in front of the the council locality building.
Okay.
To demand better, that they do something about this, that they get a plan in place and do yearly inspections. Because, these are old high rises from, like, I don't know, from 50 years ago, you know, right. And they really need to be kept up better.
Okay. Well, Maddie, I want to thank you for doing this interview. I want to thank you for talking to us. I've got about a minute left. Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with?
Keep up the struggle. It's a struggle every day. Join your local tenants union and you know, keep up the fight. Stay strong.
All right. Well, thank you, Maddie. I appreciate you for talking with us.
Thank you.
And good luck.
You too.
Okay.